Hi, welcome back to another episode of You the Mother podcast by Abby Williams, a space dedicated to supporting, empowering, and connecting all parents in all seasons of parenthood. You can find more supportive content over on Instagram at You the Mother, and be sure to check out youthemother.com, where you can reach out to work with me one-on-one or sign up for my group coaching. August groups are up and open for signups. I like to keep groups small so that everybody has a chance to share and feel supported. So make sure that you hurry and go sign up before it closes. If you are navigating difficult family dynamics, estrangement, boundary setting, healing the mother wound or the father wound, you are welcome. No matter where you are at in your journey, you will find your people and just feel so supported and so seen. So I hope that you join us. And in today's episode, I'm welcoming on Joe and Mel from the Strong Family Project podcast. Joe and Mel have been married for 16 years and are raising three boys, ages 5, 11, and 13. Joe was a teacher turned entrepreneur who realized he was spending more time on his work than with his family. Mel was a social worker turned stay-at-home mom, and in 2020, they decided to move 2,000 miles from home to a place better aligned with their family values in order to refocus on the most important organization in their lives, family. And together they created the Strong Family Path, which involves seven elements that help us raise confident, independent, and resilient children. The foundation for the remaining six is creating and implementing core family values. They then focus on goal setting, accountability, morning routines, family dinners and meetings, and evening debriefs. Finally, they utilize a mindset that is important to keep the pulse on all the different relationships within the family and provide support where it is needed. Joe and Mel walk us through what this strong family path is, how we can implement it in our families. If you have been following along for some time, you know Marcus and I do our weekly check-ins. I kind of tie that into this episode, and I love what Joe and Mel are doing, and I have implemented some of their strong family path methods into things that we were already doing, and it has made all the difference. So I really encourage you guys to go give Joe and Mel a follow. They are over on Instagram at Official Strong Family Co. They are on Facebook at Strong Family Co. and Strong Family Life. And you can find them on their website, strongfamilyproject.com. They also offer a free PDF on their website that outlines the Strong Family Path, so be sure to go grab that as well. I hope that you enjoyed today's episode, and if you do, please be sure to leave a 5-star rating and review. Your support here on the podcast always means the world to me, and I so appreciate you being here. So let's get started in supporting you, the mother. Joe and Mel, welcome to You the Mother podcast. I am so excited to have you both joining me here today to talk about the seven elements of a strong family path. So thank you again for having this conversation. And please tell my listeners a little bit about yourselves.
Well, thank you again for having us on. We're so excited to be here. And just a little bit about us and how we got to where we are. So we have been married for 16 years. We have three boys, ages 5, 11, and 13. And we basically had a huge life change in 2020. So before, as everybody did, right? Before that, Joe had originally been a teacher. I was a social worker. And then after having my second baby, I decided to stay home. And Joe decided to take a turn and start a business. So he was teaching and he was running our fitness facility after school and really wasn't home a ton. So he was gone like 12 hours a day. I was home with the two babies. And 2020 rolled around. Everything shut down, including our gyms. And I decided to homeschool for that year because the schools just weren't providing. They were just going to be letting our kids go back one day a week, which wasn't going to work for our kids. And we also had some rentals that nobody was paying rent because of moratorium. So all these things stacked up. And we went on a walk and Joe mentioned, why don't we move somewhere else? And I thought, that's a crazy idea. But after I let it marinate, basically overnight, we printed out a list of the states and decided, you know, where could we see ourselves that would align better with our family values. And at this point, mm-hmm. we had set up some core values, and we just made this leap of faith, moved 2,000 miles away to a town where we don't know anybody. I mean, now we do, but at the time, we just kind of took that leap. And as we took that leap and decided to live more along with our values, we started to do a few other things routinely in our family, and that's how we set up this family path. So we've kind of organically come up with these pieces over time and decided to create them into a strategy that we hope other families could implement in their own lives as well.
Yeah. Can you tell me, I guess, like, what were some of your family core values that you guys came together, became aligned with? I talk a lot on my platform about my estrangement journey and my healing journey. And one of the things that I do talk and like stress to people is really honing in on what are your core values. And I think that so many of us come from all kinds of different family backgrounds, right? But we kind of come from these families of origin. And sometimes we have to untangle some of our stuff from our past stuff. Sometimes we, you know, maybe come into a marriage and, you know, you guys have to figure out what are our values together. How are they different from maybe a previous version of me, a previous version of you, our families? What kind of stuff do we want to bring with us and what kind of stuff do we want to leave behind? I think that we're a big generation of cycle breakers. And so I think it's really important that this generation really leans into figuring out what some of those core values are. So I'm curious how you guys navigated picking out what core values were for you and how you guys walk others through picking out core values for themselves.
Yeah, Abby, it's really well said about helping people find out whatever they independently stand for. We stand for some different things than our parents did. Our kids will stand for some different values than we teach. However, it's figuring out the process and deciding it for you and what works for your family. And so we started out, Mel shared, that things were really out of balance. I was spending way more time on my business organization than my family organization. And our first step to realign that was to take a lot of the lessons that we learned from the business world and teaching business and teaching as a high school history teacher, put all this together and then come up with what are the good parts about that tough time. And so one of the good parts were the companies that actually live by values, or the organizations that live by value, from sports teams to a friend of mine is part of an orchestra that has values and she's excellent at it because they've established it. So whatever it is, these high performance companies, teams, organizations, including families, all had values. So what we did is independently, we sat down and brainstormed our list. Now, we had young kids. It'd be great to include older kids if you're starting off with older kids on their own list. And we came up with 50 or so, and we used a business technique called Kill, Keep, or Combine, where we shared back and forth. We decided, like, all right, well, this is an important value, but it's not a core value. There is a difference. And so we crossed those off the list. We killed those. We kept the ones that we found really important, and then we combined ones that were similar. So she might have thankfulness, and I had gratitude. All right, well, let's work this into language and combine it. We narrowed our list down. We presented it at a family meeting for the next 90 days. We're going to try these on for size as a family and see, are they true for our family? And then go forward with them and integrate them into our day-to-day life. And I'll let Mel share probably a couple examples you have asked for early on and what ours happened to be. But again, the emphasis isn't on follow somebody else's. It's choose yours, but we're happy to provide what we do.
Exactly. So when we first made our list, it's important, and you touched on this really, really nicely when you were describing, because we need to go through and see what is valuable to us as individuals and then as a couple, because there might be things that you feel like you have to write down because that's what mom or dad would want you to write, or that's because some other circumstance in life is pushing you to write. So it's really a self-reflection exercise. And then it does lead to some deep conversations between us because we really wanted to whittle it down to like 5 to 7. So what's memorable is portable. So when it's short and sweet, you will remember it. If we have this list of 10 to 15, like how are we supposed to, I'm not going to remember it. The kids certainly won't remember it. So to give you a few examples, we came up with 6. We got the little average there. And the first one Joe already touched on was gratitude. That's super important to us. And we find ways throughout the day to share it. Most specifically at dinner time, our 5-year-old gets to pick and choose the order we go in and sharing our gratitude from the day. And another is be genuine. We recognize that within our family, we do have a family culture, but we have five individuals in this family that all have very unique talents and interests and needs. So we make sure we focus on that's really important to our family. The next one is my favorite, which is wanting to be together. We want the kids, and actually us as a couple, to want to hang out and want to be together and not just be together because we live in the same home. So that's been a focus for us. We try to find family things to do together. Or if there's a choice, should we play a game as a family or go watch TV in different rooms? That value really helps guide us to what the decision should be for our family. So that's the first three. Then we have be adventurous. So this was a big piece of what helped us to decide to move. Because, you know, I was kind of panicking, like, my family's here. How can I leave them? Like, this is all that I ever have known. It was that fear of the unknown. But that adventurous spirit that we try to foster in our family really helped us to take that leap of faith. And the last two, well, number five is personal accountability. So we're really, really big on, there's no blame game in our family. We try to really be personally accountable for what did I do in this situation that caused something to happen? Or even something like, you left some dirty dishes at the table. You know, be accountable, go put them in the sink. So it really, that language just goes into day-to-day life. And finally, having personal growth and development. So being a forever learner, we truly believe that school as it is just one little piece of who you are as a person and what educates you in life. So we try to create situations and opportunities and take opportunities that will help each of us grow as people.
Those are all really beautiful.
Well, thank you.
I feel like I want to kind of take some of those home with me today. I'm curious, as like you guys have created these core values and you sat down together, and I loved like the kill list that you had going on. How do you guys maintain those core values? You know, I think like we live in a really busy world where you get caught up in the day-to-day stuff. Do you guys have some kind of system in place where you guys are checking in or holding each member accountable to staying true to the core values? Or, you know, how do you kind of balance that?
On a very high level, we use those core values in how we make a lot of family decisions, and the kids mm-hmm. use them in how they decide who to hang out with. Our oldest son came home and said, "Hey, I really like this kid at school." And Mel pressed him a little bit to understand more. He's like, "Oh, you know, honestly, he just embodies a lot of our values." And so they're using them as a filter to help choose. But you also hear in the values like personal accountability, growth, be genuine. So you can be genuinely yourself, but to balance that, you have to put some effort into it. That's the personal growth side. Yeah, I was a college athlete, so people assume my kids will be, because that's who I was. And that's just, I don't care if my kids, the way of one that loves robotics, not interested in sports, great. You can do that. You're going to be encouraged to do that. You have to work on it, though, whether it's any discipline. So we use that to shape a lot of our behaviors of our family. But then to bring it down on a tactical level, every week at our family meeting, each person shares out how they embody one of the family values or how somebody else in the family embodied one of the core values for that week. So we work into our language and practice so the kids learn them and they make decisions by them. It's not just an act in memorization, it's an act in behavior change.
And initially, when we first shared them to the kids at a family meeting, ironically, I had printed them up on little bookmarks. So I think visuals are great with kids and me. I love charts and laminating everything because then it keeps us accountable, which again is one of our values. So it might sound kind of silly like that we talk this way, but we literally speak in terms of the values. So we have a chart for the summer where the kids have to read every day. They need to write their journal every day, et cetera. So it's like, okay, go check the chart. Were you accountable today to these things? So like Joe mentioned, we talk about it at our family meeting. I made those little bookmarks and it was on the table forever. And we just talked about it at dinner, talked about it at every family meeting. And it just takes that consistency and having it out and talking about it. And us as adults, as the parents, beginning to speak that language to the kids. Instead of saying, well, whose fault was this? We say, okay, how can you be accountable? So they start to learn those words. So it's really just consistency and trying to weave it into every piece of what's going on in the path, our strong family path, or just in family life.
Yeah. So you guys talk about establishing this strong family path and that there's seven elements involved. Can you kind of walk us through what these seven elements are and what they mean?
Of course. So we've thoroughly covered number one, which is core values.
Number one, yep.
And that's really important because that truly is the foundation of all of the rest of them. And it might seem a little daunting to start that process, but it really will set the, it sets the foundation, like I said, for everything else. So another one that we do that's very important is our goal setting system. So every year, and it can be in January, it certainly doesn't have to be, we create a family vision, but it's not necessarily the entire family. We each individually this year sat down for 10 minutes. Everyone had to draw a picture or pictures of their goals that they want to accomplish that year. And they couldn't stop drawing though. You had to keep going till 10 minutes was up, because usually like you'll get started and then you kind of get the easy ones down, but you really had to think about it. We taped them up in the kitchen. They're visible. And the other thing that we do is every single week at our family meeting, we set a weekly commitment. So this is a tactical strategy to actually not just think of these goals as some kind of a dream that hopefully will come true, but we set a small little incremental step every week. So for example, if you're one of our sons wanted to do 1,000 pull-ups on his birthday, so he might do 10 pull-ups a day for a week. And then we reconvene in a week. So you don't get bored. You don't have to do the same thing all the time. It might be reading for 15 minutes a day. So we set that weekly commitment. And then every night at dinner, we have to go back to that value of accountability. And we say, you know, who did their commitment today? And if you didn't, that's kind of your nudge to get it done. And we also, every 3 months, we like reconvene and see, you know, where are we at with these goals? Can we tweak something? This morning, one of our sons added a few goals for this year because those things were not at top of mind back in January. So it's just a fun system that sets goals for every person for their individual genuine needs, but also gives them like, here's what you actually are doing to get closer, not just hoping it'll happen.
I like that there's room though to like change your mind, or that like humans just aren't consistent creatures. You know what I mean? Like things right. change, our interests might change. You might decide halfway through the year, you know, oh, I actually want to pivot and go this way, you know? So I love that there's kind of room for that.
Yeah, exactly. This is the other piece of this whole path, just in general, is that it can fit any different family system. I know you work with all different kinds of family units. Yeah. So it's not like it's specifically for a certain kind of family. You know, everybody can think of a goal. Everybody mm-hmm. can take steps towards it. So it's very flexible. Yeah. Another piece is the morning routine. We think it's really important that our kids wake up in the morning with some kind of a purpose. We want them to feel like they're part of a family organization. They can contribute. So they do a little 5-minute workout when they wake up, and it's not really to like get them sweaty and like a big workout. It's more just to get them used to the idea of getting up and taking care of themselves. Mm-hmm. And then they each have a contribution in the kitchen. So we specifically use the language of contribution, not chore, because chore mm-hmm. is really negative. I don't even like that word. So, you know, it's something unstacking the dishwasher, refilling the ice trays, and everybody can be involved in that. Even the 5-year-old helps in whatever way that he can. Everybody feels like they're a valued part of the team. And then they do a journal. They set a couple goals for that particular day. They write down some gratitude. Again, those are all things that align with our values. And only after they complete all of those steps can they use like a tech time or something that they of their choosing. But honestly, with consistency over the last few years, it just all happens. And then when summertime hit, after school was over, we're like, these things are still going to continue, you know? And
it's hard transitioning into summer sometimes.
It sure is. Yeah, they can sleep a little longer, but they still, yeah. It's such a habit now. Yeah. I mean, habits can easily go away if we just said, forget right. it for the summer. But that's been a really big piece of ours. So
yeah.
Next, family dinners. You want to talk on that?
Yeah, family dinners was something that we didn't have a lot of before that was really important for us to put on the path. So we don't make family dinners regimented time or even really care about the food. It's that we try to have a time that sits together. It could be somewhere between 2:30 and 7. sometimes we hit a little tighter window, but that the time for us is important. We don't have this classical dinner where it's got to be laid out and everyone has to do it at this time. If they're into soccer or they have after school activities, it's going to be a little later. We still prioritize sitting down as a family. And during the dinner, we sit down, we practice a gratitude. Our youngest goes around and chooses who goes first. And we share something that we are thankful for from our day. We have some conversations and have some really cool homemade food usually. We're really into like the old school sourdough, kombucha, like type food together.
And the cool thing too is if we have like a kid's friend over for dinner, or we had our two sons' youth group leaders for dinner last week, we still do the gratitude and we just involve them in it. So I think it's really neat in that way, because a lot of times like our kids' friends will be like, oh, what's this about? Or our middle son's friend was here last week and he joined our family workout that morning. You know, so we don't.
So you're like sharing like your family culture with,
right,
with another family.
We don't stop doing it just because like someone else has entered the picture. So, and then what comes out of family dinners too is every Saturday we do our family meeting at dinner. Now it doesn't have to be at dinner, of course, but that just works out for our schedule. And this is kind of an exciting piece of the path. Meetings tend to be sound like they're going to be boring and terrible, but the kids, the way we do it, the kids look forward to it. And if we miss one, they're like upset about it. So we start out by, like Joe mentioned earlier, we each share a way that we've embodied a core value. So it could be, I was adventurous because I climbed the mountain behind the house. We have a trail behind the house. But we have to all talk about one way that we've embodied the values or how someone else did in the family. And then we move on to discussion topics. So anybody in the family can bring the topic to the table. And just a little caveat, we do this every week because we don't want family meetings to be this thing that only happens when there's like a big issue to address. So some of the meetings are really quick. Some of the meetings are more in depth, but anybody can bring up a discussion topic. And the special part of that is that the kids oftentimes will come up with the solution. So if it's something like, oh, we have an issue with tech time, like you guys aren't marking it on the chart, or it sounds like you're going over the time, like the timer goes off and you're still on your computer, how can we solve this? And the majority of the time, the kids will come up with the solution. We might say, and this is what success will look like. We want this to be the outcome. How can you guys get there? And if they share what they think, they will buy into it because it was their solution.
Yeah. And you're like teaching problem solving skills, you know?
Exactly. And communication and right. Eye contact, all that stuff.
Right.
After we finish,
I'm curious with the weekly meeting, because my husband and I currently do a weekly check-in where we like meal plan. We go over the logistics for the upcoming week. We've got four kids. Who's going to run kids where, you know, the activities. We go over our to-do lists, our weekly goals, whatever. But I love that you guys include your kids in your weekly check-in and your weekly meeting. Was that something that you waited till a certain age, or has it like grown organically? How has that like evolved or come to be?
Yeah, we started it right away. The 5-year old even participates. Yeah, he might be playing around sometimes. Sometimes he may be more active, but our purpose is that we don't want them to go out in the world without being a part of a high performing organization.
Yeah.
And our family meeting is the opportunity to do so. And we do a lot of the things you do as well, Abby. Like we'll go through the logistics of the week. Our 5-year-old's like, when are we going camping? Like he wants to know the date and schedule. The other two go
that's
through
my oldest.
Soccer practice. Yeah, exactly. They like to know and be a part of the organization. So I don't see a reason to cut them out, especially at a young age. Teach them that they have a voice and that they can ask questions and be heard. And this is a great opportunity to do so.
And of course, there's some things like we have certain podcasts scheduled, right? We don't necessarily have to talk about those kind of details at the kids' family meeting. But certainly if it involves them, it's super helpful to do that. Like meal planning, maybe there's a day of the week that the kid gets to decide what the dinner is. Like that's, again, showing them that they have value and that they have power and they're part of this organization.
I should say one more critical part of the purpose of the family meeting is to make decisions without overwhelming emotions. And so when kids want something, it teaches them impulse control. Like, I want to buy this thing. Well, you're going to have to wait to the family meeting and present on why you want to spend this $100 on whatever. And so it teaches them some control. There might be a sticking situation between some of the brothers, and they bring it to the family meeting and we discuss it with low heart rates is the phrase we use, versus trying to handle every situation in the moment. A lot of the things can be kicked to the family meeting and handled when emotions are a little bit lower for better outcomes.
Yeah, we even have, sometimes we make a list. Like my son will say, I want to talk with this at the meeting. Go write it down. Like I love post-its. Like just write it down on a post-it and then I will help you remember. Of course, there's certain things that can't wait, but that's fine. I think we all have discretion as to what can wait and what has to be addressed right away. After we do the discussion topics, we move on to tough truths, which is also really powerful. And this is, we've created a culture in our family where we can positively criticize each other. So one of our sons got braces this year, and he started to be self-conscious about speaking. So he would look down, and we couldn't hear him very well. He'd kind of mumble. So the tough truth was, hey, we want to help you recognize that you're having a hard time communicating. This is something that we want you to work on. And the other cool thing is that the kids can call us out too. This is not just like a parent-to-child thing. The kids can totally call us out. My son called me out on a crappy dinner I made. They called Joe out on using his phone at the dinner table. So we have to be humble enough to receive their criticism as well and then actually make behavioral change because of it. So that's a really cool part of, and sometimes there's no tough truths, but, or sometimes my son will say, I really want to tell this to daddy. I'm like, that's a tough truth. Like, you need to go do that. So again, gives us that language of how to speak to them and how to empower them and that their thoughts and feelings are important as well. And that action comes from that. It's not just like, well, thanks for sharing. And now let's just move on. Once we complete the tough truths, we go around and, oh, we decide on our weekly commitment, which I already talked about with the goal setting. And we go around and everybody gives everybody a compliment.
I love that.
And then after we do all the compliments, we get up and we give handshakes, you know, look each other in the eye, give handshakes. And then I always lean in for a hug too. And that's how the family meeting runs every week.
Yeah, that's nice. I think I definitely want to kind of incorporate the kids in ours. I think we have like a big board in our kitchen where we write like our meals for the week and all the activities. So like the kids kind of know what's going on. But I love like including them in the planning. And yeah, I think that that's a piece that needs to come to my house as well. I'm going to take that too.
They do pick very cool things. Like our older one picked, like, hey, I want to do origami this week with mom. And like that's got to come out so it gets on the schedule. Or, hey, I want to go 3D printing once this week so our library has it. Or a younger child wants to walk to the mailbox. Like he brings these things up during family meetings so that we can schedule them during the week.
Right. And you, I think they just feel better when they're involved. And if questions come up, like my son might say, well, when's soccer practice or who's going to drive me to soccer? That's all just handled at that time. So I think we have, did you have more to say?
No, the next piece, I'll go briefly to the relationship one and then you can go evening debriefs because that's an important one. Relationships are a piece of our strong family path. It's really important, but not a lot to talk about. It's just simply you have to pay attention to the relationships within the household. And we want to bring awareness. This includes your relationship with your significant other, my relationship with the kids, Mel's relationship with the kids' relationships with themselves, and finally, your personal view of yourself and how you are doing. And so there's a lot of different relationships, and we look at our core values a lot when things feel off, like, hey, you know, this person feels like they haven't been extra accountable. They've been, you know, sneaking around a little bit lately, or they haven't been focused on personal growth. Maybe they have some self-confidence issues that we can start to work on together. And so to look through the relationships in the household when things feel a little off, using that parent intuition, and then try to repair it. Like if one child isn't communicating well with the parent, maybe the commitment for the week will be to walk, or we just walk to the mailbox because we live on the side of a mountain. So it's like a half mile away. And so it might be like, it's not saying like, hey, you need to communicate more. Like, hey, let's go for a walk one day this week and see how that goes. And so trying to manage the relationships, including when you need time to say, hey, like my view of myself right now is like, I'm really stressed out, overwhelmed. Like I need to hit the reset button on a few things I need. And we speak like, I need this afternoon to just refocus on some things, or we need to go out for more walks together as a couple. And so keeping those in mind and having strategies to help fix these things before they fester and become major issues.
And the mindset that it shifts is that now you're focused on looking for what's going on within the different relationships in the home. And I think it also has pushed us to spend more individual time with each kid. Because if I go for a walk with us, for all together as a family, it's fun and it's great. But if I go with a walk with just one of the kids, I hear things that I never would have heard if we were all together. So I think it's just focusing on that there's many, many relationships within the family helps us to make choices on how we spend our time. And even Joe and I mean, so many of the things that we've decided have happened on walks we take together. and we talk about the kids on walks we take together. Like, a lot of our planning and thinking and sharing is on these walks, because when you're just home and you're hoping to find a minute together, you'll always be interrupted by one of the kids. It's really hard. So we've made that a priority. We don't want to become the parents that one day when the kids are gone, we don't like each other anymore. So we've made that a focus for ourselves. The
My husband and I walk together too, and it's awesome. Where we daydream, I feel like.
Yeah.
We kind of
get like daydreamy, or like, oh, what you want to do in the future? Where's like your goals, right? Where we want to be in 5 years, you know? And like, it's really fun kind of to daydream with your partner.
I love calling it daydreaming. That's really great. Yeah. You know, we tried to do like date nights, but that requires babysitters, and that requires paying for a dinner and getting yourself there. We thought, why don't we just walk together every day?
Way less stressful.
Yeah. Even if it's when our littlest
when you're like happy during the day and not like at the end of the day where all you want to do is like get in bed and not touch anybody. And
you get it. I mean, even when our littlest was like an infant, we would just put him in the stroller. The other two are a little older. We kind of tested the waters, let them stay home, and we would just kind of walk the street. But it was, you know, there's always a way to make that time if you really want that to be a focus. So the final piece of the path is the evening debrief. And I was a social worker for 5 years, so I counseled families. And there's a therapy term called the doorknob scenario or situation, where you're talking, and then at the very end of the session, just as their hand's about to touch the doorknob to leave, that's when they bring up like the real sensitive topics, the ones that you wish they would have brought up at the beginning. So,
well, we'll talk about that next week.
Right, exactly. So I found this to be a really good parallel with the evenings with kids. So I do put my 5-year-old to bed separately because he's still little, and I kind of do it with him. But it's really the older two. Once they're showered and they're, you know, all cozied up, this is when they feel comfortable to start sharing about what happened at recess, what their friend said at the lunch table. There's always drama at recess. Our son plays soccer and someone's always breaking a rule or doing something. Or our middle schooler, who just started middle school this past year, that was a big transition for him. He was hearing things that maybe I wish he hadn't heard, but you know, you can't avoid all of those things. But this evening debrief time was the time when he would be more willing to share. And I could easily walk into the room at night and say, I love you guys, good night. All I want to do is go to bed because it's like 8:45. I'm done with the day. But I noticed that this is when they would start bringing things up. So now it's a purposeful thing. Like, I enter the room, we sit down, we do a little prayer, and then oftentimes things will start to come up. Sometimes they don't. But I want to make sure that I'm available for them in case they do, because once that thought passes or that day passes, they might never bring it up again. So it's just an opportunity that I seized once I saw that it would oftentimes be something that was important, time that they were taking that needed to be, or a time during the day when they were finding it comfortable enough to bring up these issues. So, and those are the 7 pieces of the path that, you know, we do this systematically in our home. It's kind of become just who we are, part of our culture, and we feel that we nip a lot of discipline issues in the bud because we have these core values and we offer our kids opportunities to contribute and feel valued. So it's worked really well. And I think, like, I love how you took a piece of the family meeting and you want to like take it in. We're not saying you have to do it this way. We're saying consider starting some of these things in your own family, and it might really blossom for you.
It just sounds like each piece really cultivates connection. You know, I think like that's like the biggest word, and like the strong family path is just connection. And I think that there's so many of us who, I think that our whole generation is really breaking a lot of cycles. You know, we've got a ton of research and new parenting techniques out there that are, you know, promoting building these connections with our children and doing things different, you know, kind of parenting alongside of them instead of do as I say and, you know, I'm the authoritative whatever, you know. And so I just think that like so much of this path is just building those connections with them, honoring your children as people, and having a strong family unit is just like really my takeaway from this path. And I think it's really powerful. I definitely will be taking some of them home with myself, so I hope that my listeners do as well. I'm curious, you know, as you've kind of created the path and cultivated each piece, Do your children have things that are their favorites, their least favorites? Are there things that they're, you know, kind of like, oh, roll my eyes now that you're kind of coming into some teenage years, some preteen years? Do you have any kind of stuff like that? Or do you feel like since you guys are so rooted in each one of your values and it's played out in each one of these elements in the path, that things run smoother?
We find that these are like more like guardrails. It keeps us relatively on the road. We are not without our discussion topics that we need to keep, do some course correction occasionally. In general, they do like all of them and they use all of them, but they certainly prefer some. Our oldest son loves Be Genuine because he is different than everyone else in the household with his robotics and his 3D printing. He just wants to get into that stuff and he's really kind of engineer minded. And then our next one down is he leans into the Be Adventurous one. He likes to do the whitewater rafting and now, not saying the other one doesn't, he's actually paddleboarding and kayaking right now with a family friend who's taking him out on an adventure. So they do like him, but all to different degrees. It's just kind of keeps him on the road and not getting too far off.
And as far as like the pieces of the path themselves, there really isn't a lot of pushback. I think because each piece of it, they feel like they have buy-in. Like the morning routine. I mean, if we tomorrow told them, hey, you don't need to do the dishes anymore, you can just leave them for mom to do, they might look at me.
Cool.
Yeah, they'd probably be okay with that. Like if they're sick or something and I'm like, I'll do your contribution today. Like they're obviously happy about that. But I do think that they then feel like, wait, this is how I help. I think there is, they do feel that now that they do it every day. And I think they want to be like the older two want to be a good example for the 5-year-old as well. So if they just stop doing it, I think they recognize that that would be an issue. So I don't think there's really pushback on anyone, but we also aren't like the only one that we're super clear about, like we're doing the family meeting right now. I don't walk in at bedtime and say time for the evening debrief. Like we don't talk like it's just kind of the process of how the day runs. And because we've done this for so long now, it's almost like they expect it. So they'd almost be more upset if it didn't happen. If I walked in one night and I said, I'm so exhausted, I'm just going to go to bed, they might be fine with that, but I think they'd be disappointed because they're so used to, they expect this time. So,
To brag on Mel a little bit, she's been doing a back and forth journal with her older two kids during the summer, so they still get their writing practice. And she asked them, what does your perfect day look like? And both of them started it with waking up and doing their morning workout and doing their contribution for the family before they got into like, the perfect day wasn't like, hey, we're not going to do these things. They're bought into them. They appreciate them. I was surprised and impressed by that.
Right. I'm surprised by that too. Yeah. Because they're kind of at ages where, you know, it's kind of age appropriate that you might get some pushback on some of those things.
Of course. And there are times certainly on one of my son's list for the summer, I wrote down math facts and he said, why is that there? I said, well, you know, we still need to work on it. So like they're certainly, but it's really leaning into accountability. Like, do you know your math facts?
We had some of those talks today about math facts. <Yep.
laughs> So it's like, do you know them? Not all of them. Okay, so let's be accountable. Sometimes mom or dad have to step in and put their foot down and say, this has to be on the list. Like you have to read 15 minutes a day. Some kids will read for hours a day. Sadly, my kids are not like that. One of them will read like a encyclopedia type book about animals or robots, the oldest, he would sit for an hour, but I want them to also read novels. Anyway, there's certain things that I certainly have to push and say, this needs to be done. But having a chart, they feel successful. Who doesn't like to check things off a list when they've accomplished it?
Right.
And as adults, they're going to have to know how to do that as well.
Right. Do the contributions kind of rotate or change, or do those stay the same?
Between the older two, they rotate. It's like
they rotate.
Mel does this great like morning protein veggie shake for them to start their day off healthy and right. And one of them preps that and one does the dishwasher and they flop. The youngest one wanted to contribute because he saw the other ones doing it. Now his task is to open the ice drawer while the other ones are carrying the ice trays over to put it in so they don't spill water everywhere. His task is the same as it's age appropriate. But the other two, they bounce back and forth day to day.
But now that it's summertime and now that they're a little older, I recognize that they need to learn more contributions. So part of this is me letting go of being a bit of a control freak and thinking, well, I can just do it better, so I'll just do it. So my next step that was going to be easiest for me and them was to teach them how to do their own laundry. So we are in the process of working on that right now. So I had a load to put in today. So I called one of them over and tried to teach them how. But in our process with teaching these contributions is they watch me do it. And then I explain, and then I watch them do it. And then as soon as I feel confident that they can do it without me, then they can do it on their own. So I love that you asked that question because yes, they alternate in the morning, but there's other contributions throughout the day as kids get older. Like I don't want to send my kid off to college or whatever, and then they don't even know how to do their laundry. I'm not going to be that mom where they bring it home to me.
Laundry, like, making meals.
Oh, making meals. They love. Today, Henry, my middle son said, you know, we went to Walmart. He got some cinnamon bread and he's, can you teach me how to make, what is it called? French toast for lunch. Sure. So he's watched me do it and I did the first few and then he's got to get in there and get his hands wet in the eggs as well. And so so I think it's contributions can be spread out throughout the day. We specifically have the morning routine because that has to get done right then and there, but there's, you know, clever ways to work it in throughout the day. Not just to get some things off my list, but I want to teach them to feel like they can contribute, that they are capable of doing these things and mom doesn't always have to do them or dad.
Yeah, I know. I think we definitely have like contributions for our kids. We just have never like called it either chores or contributions. It's just like, it's a family of six. I will drown if I do it all right, by myself.
That's true.
So, but I do get like some of the eye roll pushback, you know, like, oh, we got to put away laundry again. And you're just like, yeah, I know. Like a family of six. The laundry is never ending. It's an everyday thing at our house.
What happens here is they'll usually, that's right. They'll usually come to me and say, I don't have any more underwear. Okay. Cause I haven't done the folding piece with them yet because it's just frustrating for me. I have like my system. I have to let go a little bit, but basically that'll be my note that I'm like, okay, I guess I haven't folded in like 4 days. Mm-hmm. We better get to it.
We do a lot of like framing and nudging, and a lot of it's around family, just having good family communication and connection, like you mentioned, and family leadership, where it's, you're not contributing to us as parents, you're contributing to your future skill set, which we also tell them, like, hey, you are learning this skill, so it enriches your life down the road, contributing to your future self. But also, like, if they don't want to do something, let's just say hypothetically, they want to leave their dishes on the table, and Mel usually picks them up. Like now we'll pause a little bit, like, okay, well, go ahead and ask your mother to do your dishes for you. And like they have that awkward moment, like, mom, can you please clean up after me? And like they sound so silly. They stop leaving stuff around, or like, oh, you want me to pick up your dirty underwear off the floor? Okay, come and ask me to stop preparing dinner so that I can go downstairs. Dad, can you please stop making dinner so you can go clean up my underwear? Like once they start building those connections, we do it in like a semi-sarcastic way, not like a gotcha way. But once they realize the truth in what they're asking to us to stop doing something that is moving our family forward to do something that they could do easily, it changes their perspective a little.
Right. And I try to think of my kids, as much as I don't want to, as adults. Someday they will be adults. I don't want them to go away, but I want them to be able to move out with the confidence to know how to do those daily things. We really feel at this point we could leave for a day and they could make themselves three meals. They could handle all of that stuff because we've taken the time slowly and organically almost to teach them how to do that stuff. So and I tell them very, very blatantly, you will not wake up one day just knowing how to do this stuff. You have to learn it. So either learn it now or you can wait till you're an adult and then try to figure it out for yourself. I think kids don't often think future. They think right now in this moment, I don't like this or I don't want to do this or that's a thing that a parent does.
Right.
So I try to give them that future mindset. Not that they have to think about that all the time, but the skill needs to be developed through nudging. We try to be very gentle and consistent and purposeful.
Yeah.
And make it fun.
And you know, us as adults don't like any of the stuff either.
That's true.
Like I hate making meals every day and laundry every day. And, you know, it's just like part of life.
Right.
Right. Joe and Mel, thank you so much for sharing your strong family path plan with us. I think this is an amazing way to form connections in your family. And like I said, so much of my following is some of these cycle breaker individuals who are doing things differently than maybe they have seen previously. And I think that this is a great way to create some of that newness and form something that is organic and true to ourselves. So thank you so much for sharing. Please tell my listeners where they can find you.
Well, Abby, thank you so much for having us, first of all. We always like to learn from other parents and take some notes from what we get asked and learn about. So thank you so much. We try to keep it simple for people who are interested at thestrongfamilyproject.com. We have the 7 steps of the path where they can get download them for free and our notes on them and examples and a starter list of 50 core values if they're having a tough time brainstorming. So right now we just give away it all for free in the steps of the path and a little worksheet that they can fill out, because the hardest part is the first step, like getting some momentum, and it's hard to start from scratch. So hopefully there's some cheat sheets that people can enjoy at strongfamilyproject.com.
Perfect. Thank you guys so much again for joining me. Everything will be linked in the description of this podcast. Joe and Mel, thank you again for helping me support you, the mother.